You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. We really appreciate you tuning in this week. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the program. We hope you come back next week. For all of you returning, thanks for being here. We couldn't and wouldn't do it without you. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the elephant ear to my corn dog, my dear friend Andy.
Motherfucker, close the door, light the weed, let the doja blow.
Are you quoting your headstone at me?
Yeah, I'm going to put that Kanye lyric on my headstone.
Our silent partner, Nate Andy, is with us making the sound happen. We're grateful to him for that. We're into the deep fall now, Andy.
We are, man.
We've turned a corner. For me, this show is really a time capsule. That's why I always think about what time of year it is right now. Because when I listen in 3 weeks, I'm like, oh, man, that was some fall. That was some real fall back then.
That felt like fall.
Yeah, it's a really good. It's a really good marker.
It's a little chillier on the
time.
Garage.
Yeah,
it's not.
I'm wearing sweaters. I cleaned up my sweater drawer and made sure my sweaters are all folded up and ready to go.
I found hoodies that didn't fit me, that do.
This is a year that I'm buying a new hoodie. Like I'm gonna pay a premium price this fall for like one of those multi-year hoodies.
Oh man, can I take you down a different path?
You can
reference an older episode.
Shorts.
You should go to Seaside, Oregon, and get a $10 hoodie at the t-shirt shop at the mall.
That doesn't sound like the multi-generational hoodie that I'm envisioning.
No, that will put you in deep with local Oregonians because everyone who's from here goes to Seaside for spring break or some other thing, and they all rock Seaside hoodies. And they're usually neon colored and very obnoxious. So get one of those. It'll function very well.
Yeah. It'll go over real smooth.
Yeah.
All over Oregon.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, awesome episode this week. We had with us in the garage from The Builders and The Butchers, Ryan Sully was here.
Oh, man. This one's really awesome. I'm a huge fan of him and his band. So this is really cool.
Absolutely. This is a band that I moved to Portland in 2007, and I happened to see them within 2 weeks of moving here. And so I've been watching them year after year. Amazing. And Ryan is the lead singer and one of the key songwriters for The Builders and The Butchers. And he played some live music for us. So you're in for that treat, listeners. It was great. And then I had a good time talking about how he approaches the craft of songwriting.
Is this our Halloween episode?
It may be. I don't know.
Sometimes Halloween episodes come out before or way after Halloween. So we could pull it like a Simpsons one. Here's a sweet treat of an episode for you tricksters.
And you're right. It does work. Now it is our Halloween episode. Oh, so enjoy a spooky time with Ryan Sully on this week's episode of Hot Garbage.
Convinced that kerfuffle was the worst swear word of all.
And that you would let them use it?
And when they would say it, I would freak out. Like, they had just said, like, the worst thing. But they figured it out pretty quick.
They put it together.
Like, put a dollar in the kerfuffle jar.
Yeah. Yeah. Now Milo will go, "You are a motherfucker," straight to his brother.
So what do you do? Like, wow. what is your reaction as a parent?
I go,
I mean,
hey.
Obviously it's really funny, but it's not, you don't want to promote that behavior. So what
I
do you
say,
do?
Hey, you're right, he is being a motherfucker, but you can't say that. Think of a more funny word. I was like, I'm trying to teach them that swear words are for dumb people and smart people have more words to use than just those. And you should use those swear words very sparingly when it's really funny. And they should know that.
In public.
Yeah, in public.
What did you to say to your daughter when she was talking about her fucking pants?
Jesus. I'm of the school of thought of, like, don't acknowledge it, and then it'll go away. Which kind of works and then totally doesn't work at all.
Yeah. It seems like a sound idea that can rear its ugly head at any time.
Yeah.
In practice.
I was told by my grandpa that, you know, stupid people say words like motherfucker. And that stuck with me for a little while, but then I just kind of forgot.
Yeah.
This is an ongoing debate with my dad because he will occasionally listen to the show and we do say things like motherfucker more often than he would like, which is to say never. And he says the same argument that it makes us sound dumb or whatever. That I don't think that's the case. I think I like them. I think they're real, real fun, real useful.
I mean,
I don't think they're that bad. I don't think
from
that
your dad's
offensive.
Perspective, you could be saying fatherfucker and that'd be even worse.
I could. Yeah. Dad. Did you hear that? It's a possibility, you know.
And I'm a guest, so I'm not really a part of this. So I'm
take a page out of Ryan's book.
Yeah. That's the worst.
Ryan, I wanted to ask you, the first thing I wanted to ask you, what is your favorite story song?
Holy shit. That's a really good question. And my favorite story song is probably... There's a song by the Mountain Goats, this band I really love, called The Best Ever Death Metal Band Out of Denton. And it's about these two like kids who start a death metal band in a small town with these big aspirations and dreams. And everybody thinks they're crazy and insane. And one gets locked in an insane asylum. And at the end, it's like a folk song, but at the end, he just is like yelling, Hail Satan. It's like such a beautiful... But it has like my favorite line of any song ever, which is like, if you punish a person for dreaming his dreams, don't expect him to thank or forgive you.
Well,
which is like the most fucking best profound.
Yeah, that's heavy.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my favorite story song.
Andy, what's your favorite story song?
Oh, man. Off the top of my head, I really like the song Isis by Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
It's a really crazy, weird story. And yeah, just the phrasing in that song is fucking crazy.
I was thinking about this, and I was drawing a total blank. The only one I can think of is The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. That's the only story. It's a great song.
Yeah. It's classic.
But there's got to be some really big ones that I've heard.
Cortez the Killer, that song, the Neil Young song.
Yeah.
That's a good story song. Hmm.
Was there one that, I mean, because that's really, you're so great in your songs at telling stories. Was that always something you were drawn to, or was there one song that turned you on to that style?
I would say that, like, before... I'd always written songs, and none of them felt like they connected with people. When you like personal songs, I'd write personal songs, and there's always like a. It felt like my life is not interesting enough to like write a. So like a story I could make up or a thing to get inspired by and tell a story about seems so much more interesting.
Yeah.
And that's all it was. And it's just kind of getting inspired by older American music, which seemed to be more story songs and less personal songs, like dark stories and interesting, weird, old, whatever, fables and things. Mm-hmm. Way more interesting than like my sad girl situation or
so
whatever.
You tried some of those songs?
Yeah, and they just were like, well, like lame you, buddy. Whatever. Like, I'll let other people who are good at that do that. I'm not...
What was the first band you remember loving when you were young?
Oh, man. That's a good question. It's really embarrassing.
I can't imagine.
Mean, I... Like, man. Shit. Like, The Doors or something? Like,
that's
when I was,
bad.
Like, 12. Like, The Door. I was like, oh, yeah, this shit's... But then I was had a conversation yesterday about The Doors. And when you grow up and you're like, oh, The Doors are... Like, kind of the worst.
That's
like,
how I feel, too. I grew out of it. I loved them in, like, eighth grade.
Loved the
Doors. I thought they were the best.
Yeah, it's, like, so profound and, like, oh, it's so deep. And now you're like, oh, it's kind of shitty poetry.
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah.
They're a group that is really hurt by the limits of their catalog. Like, Jimi Hendrix, they keep finding ways to, like, just, like, put out 30 new Jimi Hendrix songs or whatever. Mm-hmm. But The Doors, it's a pretty narrow catalog, so they get a little bit stale pretty quickly. They never had a chance to expand.
It's like between that and Jim Morrison's health.
Yeah.
It's just like The Doors just kind of crumbled. Although I did used to love L.A. Woman. Their last record is amazing. It felt like this like clinging to life. Like the band is clinging to life. There's a desperation there.
Yeah.
I like that record.
Absolutely. And yeah, you can hear him falling apart.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But
So with the band like The Doors being one of those formative bands, did that push you toward vocals? I would think if you're a Doors fan, then like Jim Morrison is the thing that you latch onto, or you know, maybe a keyboard or something like that. But were you drawn to the vocal side of that, or was there something musical that you appreciated?
Just the whole thing. It felt like they were one step deeper than like all of like the Summer of Love, whatever. They sounded like this fucked up kind of like at their best. Was like a kind of a fucked up opium, weird dark thing where like other bands were singing like about the Summer of Love and like more like hippie. They weren't like a hippie band,
right?
I think that's what drew me to that. Like they seemed odd for their time or something. But yeah, I was more drawn to like the dark lyrics and weirdness of them, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
I like those groovy keys.
Oh hell yeah.
I was blown away by like hearing the non-radio versions of the songs that I listened to when I was a kid, and how much keys there are. They'll just let them go, you know. They'll just pound those keys.
Yeah,
take your time.
Mm-hmm. He takes those keys for a walk.
Yeah.
Well, so Builders and Butchers has been together for a very long time. I think you guys got together in 2005.
Yeah.
And so you guys started out as street performers.
Yeah. Yeah, for the first, like, 2 years-ish.
2 years?
I'd say, yeah, 18 months of doing that.
So what made you go in that direction for us as opposed to playing shows and the more traditional rap?
I guess it just felt like because the songs we practiced fully acoustically and we could play the songs that way, it felt so... We'd all been in a bunch of bands and done that, played bars and played clubs and toured and... And so it felt very freeing to like not have a monitor or not have a stage or whatever. And our whole goal was to just like, where's an audience? Let's find people at a, you know, who's playing at this club tonight? Let's go in front of there and play.
Yeah, I was gonna say, where were you playing? In front of clubs?
Honestly? In front of clubs, like in front of Barbati's or in front of like the whatever Sabala's it was called back then, I think, on Hawthorne.
The pinball arcade now?
Yeah. And then in front of the Roseland, just like finding a line of people and playing. Or just like if it's Mardi Gras, just playing because there's going to be shit happening. People will be walking around, like just go play. And so it felt very, it just felt like a easy thing to do other than booking a show and doing a bunch of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something about the songs that just we wanted to do it that way. It felt very natural.
What was the thing then after about 18 months where you decide to go in the more, you know, studio shows, that kind of route?
Yeah, for a good year or maybe 6 months or 8 months or something after we decided to play clubs, because like we're like, let's get a place where our friends could come and hang out with us and do a show. But we would always play on the floor. Like it was always like still unplugged and everybody gathered around and just playing. So it was no using the sound at all.
Yeah.
And then more like after about 60 people would come, then people were like, well, I couldn't hear things. I'm like, okay, well, let's just get a passive microphone in the middle. So at least they can hear something. And then just, every show we would add a plugged in element until we just became just like everybody else.
Yeah.
band.
At least it happened like super gradually.
It did.
Seriously, like one microphone at a time. That's a resistance. Like you held strong for a long time.
It literally, like our first CD, our first record release was at Valentine's, and there was one mic, and I think maybe the bass was plugged in, and that was it. Like it was very, still very, very like just acoustic.
I feel like
I saw you guys play. I've kind of watched that band grow and the whole time too as a fan. It's pretty interesting. Not to talk about, but for me, it was at Slabtown for the Music Fest Northwest, like 2000 something. I forget which year that was, but man, that was crazy. And I got to bring this up on the show or Nate's wife will never forgive me. We saw you guys at the Doug Fir one time and you used to throw out like shakers and instruments to the crowd and you nailed his wife right in the face.
That's who that was.
Yes.
I like ran off stage and I was like, I'm so fucking sorry. And it was like, And we had been warned by, like, a lawyer, a music lawyer, like, you don't do that anymore. You're going to hurt somebody. And I'm like, bullshit, we're not going to hurt.
Wait.
It's just part of the thing.
Is Nate's wife?
Yeah. Yeah, Tiffany.
That's
Tiffany.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Should I leave?
We always talk about that. I was like, do you want to go see those guys play? And she's like, well, I'm not going to stand up front. That's for sure.
I feel like, yeah. Oh, God.
This is amazing. I had no idea this happened. I can't believe we tricked you into this.
She was yelling for it. She was just like, throw me the shaker. And then, like, spotlight, shaker, so blind, and just, like,
And I think it was a metal, like, really heavy metal can. Like, it was, like, not just like, oh,
it was
like a thing that you, if it was like, hey, I want to hit somebody with something, that'd be a great thing to do.
It was an oversized tambourine. She took it right to the dome.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's
God.
Awesome. I love that story. I didn't even know that was a real thing. It sounds like she just couldn't handle the literal and figurative spotlight, you know?
Oh, my God.
That's what it sounds like to me.
We've seen you guys play a lot of crazy places. We saw you play at the Edgefield one time.
I did. Yep.
Outside.
That was a crazy show because the first half of the show was very subdued and everyone was sitting down with their families and it was very relaxed.
Yeah.
And then the sun went down and it changed.
And the vampires came out.
Yeah. It got wild, man. Yeah. That was crazy. We saw you play on the Portland Spirit.
That was one of those like, okay, check. Got to do that on a boat.
Do they still do shows on that Portland Spirit?
They do.
I just tried to book a show on it, and it was something like $20,000 for a show. Like, is what Whoa. You need to some Jeez. Insane amount. So when people do shows there, I'm like, I don't know how the fuck that works. That pencils out, but like, I guess some people can do that.
I think maritime law demands that they have 17. Trained seamen on board for every voyage of the Spirit. So, yeah, you know, you're running quite a tab to just get that thing out of harbor.
And they're totally undercover. They just look like people at a party. Mm-hmm. But they're
they don't have to be uniformed.
Working. Yeah.
But they're there. Required to be there. Maritime law.
Maritime law.
There's some gnarly maritime law. We had to ride on a ferry once to go to some random place in Alaska. And we had to, do like a background check and stuff to get on this ferry. It was crazy. Like the level of security just to ride on a boat.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
They're protective of the sea.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, once you're on that boat, I mean, you get out into the water and it's just like.
That's when the knife fights start.
They can dump you.
Open waters, international territories.
Especially up in Alaska. I mean, there's no one's going to look for you.
No.
If you get tossed off a ferry in Alaska.
That's right. No.
Well, Ryan, you played some songs for us here in the garage, which we were really grateful for. Love to play the first one. Tell us a little bit about the first song. I know it's a new one.
Yeah, we released a new record in May, and so I wrote it a couple months ago, maybe. And it just is one I've been playing live and trying to work out. And I wish I had a better story about it because that's what this is about. But I'm trying to, since I do play separate from the band quite a bit, I'm trying to like write more songs that are a little more intricate and a little bit more just, I'm not sure if that's going to be a Builders and Butchers song, but it might be on the next, if and when we do another thing, it might be, I just don't know. But I was trying to write, I'm trying to get away from when I do solo, play by myself, playing just Chug-a-Lug and Builders and Butchers songs because they're just very simple and work so much better with the band.
Yeah.
So I like doing stuff a little bit more subdued.
Awesome. Well, we decided that maybe the working title for this song is going to be called Red Road Georgia. It's an awesome number, and let's give it a listen right now.
I'll do a new song and then a couple old songs. Let me know when it's... Okay. In love with the razor boys, surrounded by broken toys, I shield my face from the wind and the calms. Born again, I met you in Arkansas. The moon was much brighter then. I was a loaded gun and drunk before dawn. I took the red bird down so far I thought that I would die. I followed the red road down so long that the dust was in my eyes. I saw my red blood pouring out of a cut from broken glass. Oh, Georgia, lay me down in your tall grass. I smelled like the rain again, 10,000 sheets to the wind, a ragged collection of spells, and you'll never tell. I'm walking on legs of wires, speaking the tongues of fire. Raging across the tops of wings in the sky. I took the red bird down so long I thought that I would die. I followed the red road down so long but the dust was in my eye. I saw my red blood pouring out of a cut from broken glass. Oh, Georgia, lay me down in your tall grass. I took the red bird down so far I thought that I would die. I followed the red road down so long that the dust was in my eye. I saw my red blood pouring out of a cut from broken glass. Oh, Georgia, lay me down in your tall grass. Oh, Georgia, lay me down in your tall grass. Woo! All right, thanks.
With a band like Builders and Butchers that's been around for so long, what holds it together now?
Man, it very, like, very...
Pick up your mic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's been interesting. That's a really good question, because a couple of the guys have been, like, live across the country, too.
Right.
So it's really challenging. I think, I would say, like, when you've been doing it this long, if we toured as much as we did between like 2008 and 2011, where we like were really touring consistently,
mm-hmm.
if we still toured that much or had continued, it probably wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But because we were able to like kind of take a step back and just do the band and play shows, but not try to rule the world or go out and whatever. And that, at that point, it became a lot more fun for everybody. I think instead of it being work and a big thing, now it's like super fun. We just get together once every couple months and play a cool show somewhere, or a couple over a weekend, or fly out. And it's something that we're all really grateful for,
mm-hmm.
more so than if it was like a job like it was.
When you take the pressure off like that and you kind of free yourself up, what changes about the creative process?
I mean, everything gets so much easier, and just, it's a difference between doing something that you have to do and doing something that you want to do.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing something you want to do, then you're like bringing all the things you want to bring to the table, as opposed to like, okay, I got to be here for this thing or whatever. There's none of that anymore. We just play when we want to play, make records when we want to. But to get back to your original question, what's kept it together is the people who want to see the band. I mean, it's really not about the people in the band. It's about the people at the shows and the people who are interacting with the band. And like, you know, we just got flown out for some amazing festival in Eastern Ohio 2 weeks ago. That was like the best we've ever been treated in 13 years.
Wow.
And it was like, we were so grateful to like be around these people and play this awesome show for like really cool people in the middle of a really horrible, hard place to live.
Yeah.
And they were the amazing, amazing mm-hmm. spot. So that was really cool.
That's nice. Awesome. I'm curious, just from like sort of selfishly, it seemed like you guys got big in a way very, very naturally, but very, very quickly. What did it feel like to go from some band that was playing on the streets for 2 years, very intentionally, to slowly adding, mm-hmm. you know, equipment and then having some national success and attention?
It's a really intense time as a being in a band, because there's lots of people that kind of come into your circle
mm-hmm.
and you have to kind of vet them and decide, like, is this somebody I want to work with? And if I do or don't work with them, it's a huge decision and it's going to determine how the rest of it goes.
Yeah.
Like, so that's, or like putting out a record and getting on a label and all these things that are separate from you making the music, you playing the music, that are really stressful, and getting back to like what you said before, are make it a lot less fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really intense, to answer your question. And it takes a lot of the fun out of it. It's amazing at that time to play those shows and people are going crazy. And you like went from playing to 50 people to playing to 300 or 400 people in a few months. That's amazing. But like, there's a lot of parts of it that aren't.
It's going to be crazy when our children look back at this, when they're playing video games in front of stadiums full of people. Because they're not going to play music anymore. They're all just going to play video games.
It's going to be esports.
Yeah. It'll be esports.
For your kids.
They're going to be like, man, our parents put in the work and like set up all this stuff for us. And
yeah. One day your son was playing video games in front of his family and friends, and then he's in Madison Square Garden mm-hmm. opening for a Korean esports team.
Yeah.
I'm wondering during this process too, we were talking about how taking the pressure off kind of opens things up a little bit. Did you find that during that time when it was really a focused, almost business-like effort, that you were taking fewer chances with your songwriting? Was there a formula at any point in order to satisfy these different parties that entered into your life?
I would say subconsciously, probably. There was never like a, now we have to sound like this meeting with the band, or dress us, or like just be anything but what we wanted to do. But subconsciously, those pressures of like, if I do something, if I make a really weird record, we're gonna lose our little bit of momentum, so we better just, you know, that enters in, that can't help but enter in,
right?
If you there's so many examples of bands where it's like, you do, like the Nutrimilk Hotel thing, where it's like, we'll do this record, and then the band kind of goes away, because if it had made four more records, they wouldn't have touched that, because mm-hmm. they would have gotten popular, and it would have changed the nature of what the band is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a weird fine line too, because like the whole point of doing it is you want to live off your music. So how do you do that?
So you have to really kind of make some decisions that are based financially or...
Yeah, or you're not going to do that. But I think that, like, I can say, like, the spirit of the thing was never, I don't think, was too, whatever, you want to say, sell-out-y or whatever.
I don't know. I don't even know if you... I would never accuse anybody, particularly now, of selling out. It's a different, I mean, because it, like you said, you want to, this is something you have an opportunity to do for a living, and not many people have that opportunity.
Right.
So I could never fault anybody for, you know, making some choices with that as a priority. But did it ever feel like that to you? Did it ever feel like you were compromising anything?
I don't know. Not consciously.
Yeah.
Never like, we're going to do this now or be shitty. I mean, there were shows we played that were like super corporate. Like, we did like a Red Bull event at the Crystal Ballroom.
Everybody loves Red Bull, though.
Yeah,
they've never heard a single person.
I've heard that it doesn't actually give you wings, though. It's this new controversy.
Yeah, they're gonna get sued.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the time, like the Portland Mercury did this show with like they like did this photo edit of us like with our guitars, our band photo, and like, but we're holding big Red Bull cans, and like that was like funny. But now, and like a little bit of like a call out, but like the way the Mercury does, which is, it's all good. But like now that no one would dare do that. Cause
and
like
you all wished you really had Red Bulls that big.
I was like, fuck yeah, that's a lot of Red Bull.
Yeah.
No, This podcast is sponsored by Red Bull.
we're a Pepsi podcast.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. Nobody drinks that.
The
shit.
Choice of a new generation.
Pepsi Zero.
Pepsi True.
Pepsi True.
I think Pepsi Woke.
Yeah. Oh, Pepsi Woke. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds delicious.
It's basically cherry Pepsi.
It's just got a little bit of tea tree oil in it. Just a dab.
Yeah.
Speaking of a dab of tea tree, Andy, why don't you play a song for us?
Why don't I? That's a real question. Why don't I have this like queued up and ready to go?
You have a, is that an iPhone like 2? It looks like it's tiny. It looks like
I've got an iPhone 5 now running as my iPod, and it's great. It does what I need it to do. Oh, man. I'm going to play a song by a show favorite member of the band Railyard Ghosts, Riley Coyote. He put out a new album recently called Whiskey and Freight Trains, and it's great. It's good old just like... I don't know. It's still like that black.
It's good old train music.
He has a great Bandcamp genre tag, acrustic.
Acrustic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what this is. It's acrustic blackgrass.
Oh, blackgrass. I like that.
Yeah. The song's called Restless Moon.
Thank you.
grow to feed the camp. The grass only grows because it must. And that air does not care whether we live or die. And this fire could consume us whole or keep us warm on a frozen winter's night.
The other thing I selfishly want to know about Ryan was, what was it like growing up in Alaska?
It's like being from, I don't know, it's so separated geographically and kind of culturally from the rest of the United States. It's its own thing. But it would feel very much like being from a place like Hawaii or a very like a tourist place where lots of people go and visit, mm-hmm. but very few people are from. So there's like, it's just not... Or like, you know, the Oregon coast or like someplace. It's just not a lot happening, you know,
mm-hmm.
except for the people. And it's very conservative. And living there, I felt like the most kind of like crazy radical communist. But yeah. It's beautiful. And it's amazing that is part of America, because it is raw and beautiful and incredible and vast and untapped in a lot of ways. There's a lot of places you can walk where nobody's ever walked or been.
Just never been to.
Which is unusual, but like I don't know. I'm glad I moved.
So what part of Alaska were you from?
I was from Anchorage, and I went to college in Fairbanks, which is like the very middle of the state.
Did you ever, central Alaska.
Very central, yeah.
Did you ever walk out to that bus from that famous book?
I lived 2 miles from there, and like, yeah, I've never went there, but...
You didn't die there in the winter?
I didn't die there. That's because if you can't walk there in the summer, which he found out you can't walk back, and in the winter it's like 30 below, so you're not walking anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bad place.
Bad place.
Bad place to stay.
Alaska's... Bad place to live, too. I mean, just... Living in Fairbanks was hell.
It's always seemed like a novelty. Like, Hawaii's the same way. That's a good point. They both seem like sort of like gimmick states.
Totally.
And I feel like that would have to inform the kinds of people who either go there by choice or find themselves there and stay there.
I've got a friend who lives in Prudhoe Bay, whatever that is, like the farthest north you can be.
Yeah.
He flies a bush plane type of thing, and he repairs giant like mining equipment. He's a welder.
Yeah, that's a good job.
He makes good money up there, and he's got a bunch of land. But man, it looks like rough living.
It's horrible. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, and there's mosquito. I mean, it's like.
I mean, he's always got 4 knives on him of different sizes.
Totally.
Always.
Yeah. Bare minimum. In the shower, 4 knives.
Yeah.
Clean good knives, too. Not just like sharp throwaway knives. Fuck off knives. Like real good functional knives.
Yeah.
He's shaving his armpits with them.
No, so growing up there, how did music come into your life?
I think a lot of it was being from Alaska. It's not like a good place to do much. And so people, if you're creative, that's what you do. And so a lot, we just started bands because out of necessity to do something that wasn't drugs or whatever, drinking or, and not that we didn't drink, but you know what I mean? Like not exclusively.
Right.
Something
to mask your drugs.
Something
to
mask our drugs or give us a good excuse. So we just like would go in with our band and practice as much as we could, and just wanting to get out and wanting to do that. There's so many musicians from Alaska. It's in Portland, especially. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So last Halloween, you played a Blink Theater show at Tyler's house.
I did.
My friend Dan Bajima was in town from Alaska.
Oh, the guy from way north?
Yeah, and he was like, what the fuck is happening right now when he saw you guys rapping? And he's like, is it like this every night in Portland? And I was like, yes, it is.
We blew his Alaskan mind?
Yeah, he's awesome. Never seen anything like you guys.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm in like a rap duo.
Oh, nice.
And we perform basically annually on Halloween.
Sorry, nice.
Yeah, exactly. and it's, you know, it's basically ridiculous, but this is good feedback. I like to hear this. Yeah, that warms my heart.
Yeah. He came to town for one night, and that's what he got.
And he was blown away, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
I will say this about Alaskan audiences. Because they're starved for entertainment, you go there and play, and especially if you're from there, and then you go back there and play, and it's pandemonium.
People go apeshit.
Yeah, I mean, I've multiple times at the end of shows just crowd surfed, and that doesn't happen in Portland.
Yeah.
In Portland, they make space and let you just...
Yeah. They'll maybe uncross their arms.
Right. To move out of the way.
Yeah. So you got to do the full stage dive. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I look back on stage, and like Harvey, our guitar player, he just was like, motherfucker, like, you asshole.
Did you still have your guitar on?
No. Were you like I learned
Scott
that,
Stapp from Creed or something?
You do that once, and then you're like, I'm not going to stay. It's just not worth it.
You knock out some poor lady's teeth.
Or hit her in the face. Shaker.
And then you have to confront her husband about it years later.
That's all. Is this
in some sort of trap?
This is
John Quinones is going to come out and ask, "What would you do?" Pretty soon.
Yeah, I was trying to. It's an intervention for me. All these years later.
Yeah, this is like the only measure of vengeance we could take. we subject you to a conversation with us for an hour and a half, but I'd love to hear your second song. You played an older tune, but tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah. Again, same theme of trying to get out of a small town. But it's a song called No Roses off of our second to last record called Western Medicine. And that song especially was so fun to do in the studio because every layer of it was like, it's one of those weird, like, song that just kind of is created in the studio and every idea is a good idea as far as like the layering and the whatever. And it just happened so naturally. It felt really good to make it. Like we made the drum. It sounds like a drum kit, but we did like literally a bass drum and then literally a snare drum and then shakers to glue it together. And like, it was a cool process.
Wait, we recorded them all separately?
Yeah.
Each element separately. Oh, that's so bizarre.
It was something we've never done before. Like usually we're like real live but that one was just fun to do.
So you could just sort of isolate it and really dial in tone for each element of the drums?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just...
I've told this story before, but I saw a stupid Foo Fighters documentary. And one thing that blew my mind about it was they recorded a drum part where, like, their normal drummer, Taylor Hawkins, I think his name is playing, like, the floor tom and the kick. And Dave Grohl is playing a hi-hat and a snare separately but at the same time. So they're isolating these. Two people are playing them. It's one drum part. It was such a bizarre thing to just watch being recorded.
I saw that same documentary. I thought it was really weird that originally their name was actually the Foo Fighters. I don't know why they...
Is that true?
Is that true?
No.
Oh, my God.
The Foo Fighters.
Or their original name was the Foo Fighters 182.
Yeah.
And they're like, so we got to take off the 182.
Yeah. So I heard that the 182 is how many times Al Pacino says fuck in Scarface.
Oh, that sounds like the kind of thing that would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or something about penises. One of the two.
One of them has 182 penises.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time.
Tattooed on his leg.
Scarface had the most fucks in any movie until the South Park movie came out and blew it out of the water.
Wow. That was the next one that competed with Scarface.
Yeah.
Never saw Scarface, honestly.
It gets a really good rep as being like such a great movie. It's not an amazing movie.
Not an amazing movie.
But it is a good movie in the genre of movies told from the perspective of a drug lord.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of good ones in the 90s. Carlito's Way is really good.
Blow
is pretty good.
Yeah. And we're way off track, though. Remind everybody, Ryan, one more time what the name of this song is.
No Blow. No, it's called No Roses.
Let's check it out.
I was fishing last night. I caught a salmon on like the shore. And I got it to shore, and I had nothing to bash it on the head with but this fucking rock. So I picked up this rock and did that wrong and, like, bashed the fuck out of my finger. I mean, it's fine, but it hurts. With the salmon.
You intended to murder a salmon with that blow. And you got your finger.
It actually did both, but at least it did both. It would have been really lame if I just missed it completely and just broke. Yeah, I'm like, fuck, come on, man.
Pushing your thumb through that salmon's head.
Yeah, it would have been, you know. Anyway. So should I do another one? This is called No Roses. I was born in a flood of tears. Oh, a little too stoned. I was born in a flood of tears. My parents much too late in years. And the last of the coal was mine one day. And they left me in a forgotten place. My daddy was once a good boy, but he got lost in the dust. Ain't no roses on my grave. Put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch the winter rain is falling. Ain't no roses on my grave. Put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch the winter rain is falling down. I was born on a dirty plane. From a rusted shack to the world I came. And the water rose and the weather vane. I spread my wings, my eyes ablaze. My daddy was once a good boy, but he got lost in the dust. Ain't no roses on my grave. Put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch as the winter rain is falling. Ain't no roses on my grave. Put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch as the winter rain is falling. Hold me down, hold me down. Beat me in that morning wave till all my sins have all been washed. And hold me down, hold me down. Down beneath the deepest grave and let that rain wash my sins away. I went down to the river to wash my sins away. But no water in that river, and my tears fell down like rain. Now the water's rising up above my shack on the dirty plain. My family on the rooftop, Lord, I can almost hear them sing. Ain't no roses on my grave. Put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch as the winter rain is falling. Roses on my grave, put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch the winter rain is falling. Ain't no roses on my grave, put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch the winter rain is falling. Ain't no roses on my grave, put me in the cold, cold ground. Meet me in the morning and watch the winter rain is falling. Hold me down, hold me down. Morning wait till all my sins have all been washed. And hold me down, hold me down. Down beneath the deepest grave, and let that rain wash my sins away. Beat me in that morning wave, and let that rain wash my sins away. Down beneath the deepest grave, and let that rain wash my sins away. Morning wave, won't let that rain wash my sins away. Down beneath the deepest grave, won't let that rain wash my sins away. I was born in a flood of tears. My parents much too late in years. My daddy was once a good boy, but he got lost in the dust. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
One thing, Ryan, we sometimes do, it doesn't have a name really, but it's just some random questions that we have.
Okay.
Keep it quick. Keep it simple. I don't want you to overthink it. There are no wrong answers, but I may interrogate the answers that you do have.
Can we call this one Drew's Clues?
Drew's Clues. Yeah, we can. Of course. Of course. I don't know why we... It was the lowest of hanging fruit, so I don't know why. What took us so goddamn
it's
long.
It's so ripe. Yeah. It just fell off.
Exactly. Yeah, just into my mouth.
Yeah.
So would if you had the choice between it, like whenever you want access to an amusement park with roller coasters or a water park, which would you choose?
Oh, amusement park, 100%.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer.
Oh, man. See, for me, that depends on the climate I'm living in. If it's hot, water parks are so fun.
If it's hot, I mean, it sucks to stand in line when it's hot, but roller coaster parks are just as fun in the summer.
I got to go with roller coasters, though, because we live on the West Coast and there are not that many.
Yeah, there
around.
Are no,
I miss them really,
there are no
really
roller
bad.
Coasters.
There's no roller coasters around here that are fun.
Yeah. I think that I also am just not, you know, like some people are like, dude, let's get in the water. I'm like, nope, I'm going to fucking stay on land. That's just my thing. So that's mainly my thing. Like I just, there's no advantage to walking around wet.
You're what pirates call a landlubber.
Yeah, a landlubber, 100%. Yeah.
It's kind of true because I used to be a kid who would swim a lot. I grew up living on a lake and we would swim a lot there. Mm. But now if I go to the beach, I get in to cool off for like 12 minutes and... Like between beers, and then I'm back on the land.
See, because my version of swimming is standing about waist deep in water with a beer in my hand.
It's true.
For about 2 hours.
I can't believe that.
That's
this
what
is,
I do.
It's not summertime anymore, so this
I'm one of those get in the water.
Tormenting people.
For sure.
It took me until this, literally this summer, to put my chair, my small beach chair, into the water and sit up to my waist. I don't know what the fuck I've been doing. But I blew my own mind by just like, of course.
You've wasted so many
years. Went to the river and I could have it all.
Midlife epiphanies. I'm not saying you're midlife, but you know what I mean. Like
I'll be
in
dead
life
at 70.
Epiphanies. Yeah, you're 70. Yeah. You're going to be 140.
Yeah, it's finally time that I figured it out. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, so
be sharing the water.
Good choice there. My second question, if you had the ability to fly... But the condition was that every time you use that power, some stranger in the world would experience a minor injury. But you knew that they were going to be spraining an ankle or, you know, breaking a pinky finger or stubbing a toe. Mm-hmm. Every single time you use this power, it was a guarantee. Mm-hmm. Would you do it?
I go water park? No. Oh, God.
I know. It's an ethical quandary because it'd be amazing to fly.
I would do it very occasionally. Like when I needed to,
right?
But I wouldn't
like every day to and from work.
Yeah,
would it happen
and
right
just
in front
when
of
it seemed fun, which would be always, but not more than that. Yeah.
Would it happen right in front of you? We'd be like,
I debated whether part of it should be you see the injury happening, but it's a stranger. So again, even if you're seeing it, it almost seems unreal.
It'd be cool if you could be like real baller move and like point at somebody and then fly away and their ankle breaks. What up, boy?
Could you choose the person that you're hurting? Or it's a total random.
It's totally random. Oh, so God. it's a truly innocent victim.
What's the maximum injury are you talking here?
I think a break of a small bone, not a leg or an arm, but
God, that sucks.
Like a finger, toe.
That sucks.
I know it's
if it's breaking shit, I would probably
maybe you chip a molar.
Here's what would happen with me, given my personality. I would do it a few times, and then I would be racked with guilt, and then feel
and
guilty for
flying.
The rest of my life and never do it again. But feel guilt, you know.
Yeah, you still get the guilt.
I still get the guilt.
Mm-hmm. How do we know somebody's not doing that? It's true. I stub my toe a lot.
Shh. What would that, instead of Superman, it'd be like, shitty man.
Yeah.
Or like... Asshole guy.
You better be preventing supervillains if you're being causing this much inconvenience.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, speaking of ages and midlife, my third question is: if you could make a deal today that you're either going to live the life that you're going to live, or you could be guaranteed to live to 82, which would you take?
Oh, dude, I live the life I'm going to live.
You'd roll the dice.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Totally. I have a weird thing, and this is might be. Too much information. Not too much information. It's weird.
Just enough.
Weird information. When I was like 5, I decided that I was going to live to be 89, and I've held true to that every moment. And honestly, whenever I'm scared or worried about something, I'm always like, what am I worried about? I'm going to be 89. I'm going to be fine. It's probably bullshit, but it's carried me through a lot of difficult situations.
Wow. What's going to happen? Well, how are you going to feel when you get to 88?
Of terrified?
Yeah.
Or hopefully senile?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
I have no idea.
It just hit you.
A crazy thought of a 5-year-old that I've somehow hung on to since then. I know there's not anywhere to go with it. I'm sorry, but it's just weird.
No, that's an awesome thing that you have you've got that to fall back on. I wish I was so certain of something my 5-year-old self had taught me.
Well, my thing was I thought I would never live to see 25. So this is all bonus. And you know, now we got kids, so that changed a little bit. But up until I had kids, it was just like, fuck yeah, extra life.
I have a tough time grappling with my own mortality. I don't like to think too closely about it, which is probably terrible. It's probably setting me up for my heart exploding when I'm 46 or something like that. But you guys seem much more comfortable thinking about it than I do.
My old scoutmaster walked up to me at my grandfather's funeral and was like, huh, you're still alive. How's that going? How's it going?
What, because you couldn't tie like a bowline or do like a... You know, make a fire in the woods or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I almost shot him with a BB gun one time. And,
if anything...
I was the clumsy, giant kid in his Boy Scout troop. You know, all of us went to school together.
That's awesome.
I was the one who got in all the trouble because I was the easiest to see doing it from far away.
And you had the intention to do it.
I did.
Yeah. Okay, last question, Ryan.
Okay.
If you could bring back one extinct animal... Oh, which animal would you choose?
That's a great question. Shit. A dinosaur of your choosing.
Yeah.
But a big one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I could choose.
Yeah. A big dinosaur of your choosing.
Would you want to choose one of the dinosaurs that now they think has been covered with feathers? Or would you want to choose the old school version where they were definitely more lizard-like?
I think more lizard-like.
I do too.
Because that's pretty... I don't know. I think they're both special.
I guess I want to see the real thing. Yeah. So whatever it looks like. But I think that this...
What if it's some weird version where it's like, yeah, they're feathers, but they're made out of slimy scales?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, dinosaurs apparently were just giant lizard birds. Yeah. Some of them had...
What if it's some weird hybrid between scales and feathers that's unknown to us?
Skeathers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Skeathers.
Skeathers. That's like a synthetic lining to like a down comforter or something like this. This is a Skeather pillow.
It's, no, it's 70%
it's hypoallergenic. So
it's from a real dinosaur.
But it's all organic, authentic, all organic Skeathers.
Yeah, it's organic, yeah, exactly.
Totally local. Free range yeah. Skeathers.
I brought this one thing back from extinction just to harvest its pillow feathers. It's
juicy Skeathers.
It's Skeathers.
Make the softest pillows.
Delicious, greasy Skeathers. Okay, so it'd have to be a big dinosaur, though. Like I want to see a big fucking dinosaur.
Like a brontosaurus. It's obviously, yeah, bring back a T-Rex, but I think a brontosaurus, that's big.
That's big.
Like, that's,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it'd be like some Danny and his dinosaur type of shit.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing. You'd go give kids a real thrill at the playground.
Yeah.
You can slide down my tail.
Absolutely.
I would do a giant river otter. Like the size of
I thought about some of those really big, old mammals, giant mammals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A river otter, like the size of a bus.
Or one of those big sloths.
Yeah, those are really cool.
12-foot sloths. That'd be pretty awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Ryan, you passed. I think
you
won that game.
Oh, shit.
And with that, Andy, why don't you play us a little exit music for Random Game? Or Drew's Clues. Sorry, it's got a name now.
It's got a name. And I should have a song like queued up, ready to go.
Yeah.
But you know what? Oh, I'm going to play you this. This is a German band called Snapped Ankles. And it's kind of like a punk kind of electronic kind of thing. Not so much super electronic, but whatever. I'm ruining this. It's really good. It's called I Want My Minutes Back.
Let's hear it. We'll be right back.
What was that? It's got a weird outro. Was it bad?
Oh, yeah.
It is near Halloween, so.
Yeah, that was Spooky Days at the end there.
So, Ryan, we talked a little bit about this because I know that the band, members of the band are living in different places now, so every album could be potentially your last one, but what do you foresee as kind of the future of Builders and Butchers?
Honestly, this is what the last 5 years have been, or 6 years. As long as people want to come see us play shows and want to, you know, stay in touch with the band, and we'll continue doing it. Like, there's no reason to stop. It's such a fun thing now. So that means making more records, probably just more along the lines of the once every 2 to 3 years than once a year kind mm-hmm. of thing. But
yeah.
mm-hmm. but totally, like, still love making music with those guys and, you know, really love playing shows and, you know, just talking to people and, yeah, continuing.
So with that kind of lifetime, then, do you write more for yourself now than ever before? Is there sort of a solo thing in you? Or
I would say, you know, I have like a, we were just talking about this. A little bit before we came on the air. Oh, but good. I have like a daughter now, and I think there's this weird thing, and I don't know if other songwriters experience this, but the same part of your brain or the same part of my brain that writes songs is the same part that keeps my daughter alive. And so I still write, but it's a lot slower. It's a lot slower finding the space and the quiet.
It's in between saving your daughter's life over and over.
In between
over.
Saving
it's pulling
her life.
From the same energy source, both of those activities.
Yeah, it's for, I don't know why, but
Have you noticed dad agility?
Dad agility is incredible.
Where you don't even realize it and you catch things out of the corner of your eye and shit. It's amazing. Like babies and like bottles.
If you could somehow like harness that that whatever that is into like a wide receiver.
Yeah. yeah.
Or like a point guard. Mm-hmm. It would be unbelievable. I don't know. But yeah, I've saved like, it's not so much, I've definitely caught my daughter. It's more like stuff.
Yeah.
Like I just have like this like, yep, got it. And you're just like, fuck, how did I even do that?
I have a sort of a weird question. I'm curious. So you've been in a band that's been, has had some success, has obviously been very creatively fulfilling. And now you have a family and, you know, a lot of things going on in your life. What is the kind of the edge to songwriting now? Is there still a kind of a competitiveness at all? Do you still find you're able to push yourself creatively and challenge yourself like you used to?
Sure. I think that the edge or whatever that thing is seeing bands a lot still. Seeing bands mm-hmm. that make you feel like, but my favorite thing is seeing a band that or a songwriter that makes me want to quit. Like they're so good, or somebody who writes such good songs that it makes me want to stop. Because I'm like, I could never, ever, ever be a tenth of that.
Yeah.
But I love it. It's really motivating. That's the like juice or whatever.
How about the other side of it? If they're so bad, they make you want to quit.
Yeah, that's true. That they're so bad, they're making music overall just worse, and eventually it's just gonna, yeah.
Both of those things are
yeah. bad. Both of those things are true
and good.
Do you find that you're able now, as you get older and you get more experience as a songwriter, do you still find yourself keeping in touch with new music at all?
So a little bit, but really, like if I stumble into something that's new and I like, there's this guy that we played this festival with this last weekend. His name is Tyler Childress. He's an unbelievable, like really legit country artist. I'm a huge fan now and nerding out about all of this mm-hmm. shit. But generally, I just am kind of going backwards. And with the way the availability of like, you can be on Spotify and have, you know, the entire everything. So that's how I'm listening to people now. Like mm-hmm. stuff that I went back and like, I like two records. Let me listen to all 10 of their records
yeah.
and see what the gems are and getting a lot more granular in that and kind of going back.
Yeah, that is that's a great point. You can go back, you know, 40 years and find stuff, especially in the kind of music that you make and kind of listen to. There's a deep tradition there that
totally.
Is all of a sudden available and at your fingertips.
Yeah, and so I think that's where I'm at with it. It's, I'm not, I think the nature of being a band has really changed significantly since we started the band. And like your window for success is so narrow now if you're trying to make a living or do whatever, be successful. So much more narrow, and you have so little time to like, if you know, if it doesn't work out in 6 months, then you know, whatever. So I feel really grateful to have been able to kind of very slowly garner a fan base over the years.
Awesome. Well, you were generous enough to play a third song in the garage tonight. We got time for one more. What's tell us a little bit about this last song.
This is off of the record we just put out called The Spark, and it's a song called Let It Shine. And it's probably, I honestly was trying to, this doesn't sound anything like this song, but there's a song called The Streets of Laredo.
Oh, yeah.
That Johnny Cash covered, and you know,
I learned that in guitar class when I was
Marty. Is it a Marty Robbins song?
I'm not sure.
I forget who, but anyway, I love that song. So I was trying to approximate something like that, that was both kind of like sad and positive at the same time,
mm-hmm.
like celebrating death or like finding a way through a dark, whatever moment. So, all right. And this, should I do one more?
Cool.
It's called Let It Shine. I've got a little darkness in my heart. I know one day the world will fall apart. But until it falls to pieces and there's fire in the sky, I'm gonna take my heart and let it shine, shine, shine. I'm gonna take my heart and let it shine. I've got a little darkness in my soul. No Jesus pills or whiskey fills the hole. I'll light another fire or I'll take us through the night. I'm gonna take my heart and let it shine, shine, shine. I'm gonna take my heart and let it shine. I'm going to shine like the moon at night. I'll be a million candles that light your weary footsteps and keep you safe from harm. And if that light should falter, you'll bear me in the ground and guide me through the darkness till death it comes around. There's a darkness on the broken side of town at midnight when the devils come around. I'll light us both a fire or I'll take you through the night. I'm gonna take my heart and let it shine, shine, shine. I'm gonna take my heart and let it shine. I'm going to shine like the moon at night. I'll be a million candles that guide your weary footsteps and keep you safe from harm. And if that light should falter, you'll bear me in the ground and guide me through the darkness till death it comes around. I'm going to shine like the moon at night. I'll be a million candles that guide your weary footsteps and keep you safe from harm. And if that light should falter, you'll bear me in the ground and guide me through the darkness till death it comes around. All right, thank you.
Well, Well, Ryan Solly from Builders and Butchers, thank you so much for being on Hot Garbage this week.
It was a total blast. Yeah.
We really appreciate it. It was awesome to hear you play live, a real treat for us. So thanks again. What's the best way for people to keep track of Builders and Butchers and what you're up to musically?
I would say the most, you can go to our website, buildersandthebutchers.com, and the most active social media platform we do is the Facebooks.
The Facebooks.
Yeah.
Tried and true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, make sure everybody check out the Builders and the Butchers at their website. It's a beautiful website.
Thanks.
And a lot of great stuff from the most recent release, which came out in May. So it's still pretty hot off the presses and your first work in several years. So definitely worth people's time. Urge everyone to check that out and see where some shows are coming up for the Builders and the Butchers. So thanks again.
Yeah, totally.
And thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We deeply appreciate you joining us each and every week. If this is your first episode, we hope you come back for more. The easiest way to do so is to subscribe via iTunes. While you're there, maybe throw us a couple stars and a couple words of kindness to let other people find the trail to us as well. You can also reach out to Nate, Andy, and I directly via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's H-A-U-T-E, Garbage Podcast. Andy, why don't you take us on home? Through the streets of Laredo.
I'm going to take you there.
Well, I'm going to take you there.
With Little Days and Days, featuring Portland crust punk rapper Juicy Carcass.
For Ryan, for Nate, for Andy, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.
I want to see it burn! The waves and mine, the blasted world, the double substance of God, what's the point? We're shoveling gold into the furnace, but no vessel with the terror. Spark inside my heart is extinguished. So I'll relinquish my convictions in the face of resistance. I mean.